listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
We're all miners this morning. I'm John Hockenberry here with Todd Zwillick, who's substituting for Celeste Headlee this morning. You know, 33 miners, 25 still down, 8 are out at this point. We may end up knowing the names of all of these guys, Todd. Some of the characters are unforgettable already. First one out, Florencio Avalos, 31-year-old. You know what his role was down there underground?
Wasn't he the ringleader?
He's the cameraman guy. He was the guy who was doing all the videos. Right. But the headlines in all the Chilean magazines this morning are all about Mario Sepulveda, 40-year-old, broad-chested man who was second to be pulled free. They're describing him as Super Mario this morning on the front of the magazines.
Was he the guy who jogged 6 miles a day in the tunnels?
And they call him the showman. That's right. For sure. But let's give you a reminder now of all the details that may yet become song lyrics and bedtime stories for people all over the world. The Chilean miner story began on August 5th, you'll recall, in the hard rock of the San Jose mine, deep in the earth, copper and gold being extracted, they're Chile's lifeblood. Half the world's copper alone comes from Chile. But there was a collapse on August 5th at the San Jose mine beneath the Atacama Desert, burial amidst desolation. And for 17 days, there was no news at all. There was a slim possibility that some of the miners had found shelter, but with air and uninjured and 17 days without food or water.
De las entrañas de la montaña, de lo más profundo de esta mina. Yes.
Now, that emotional voice you're listening to belongs to Sebastian Piñera. He's Chile's president, and he's waving a scrap of paper that had been tied to a probe and sent deep into the mountain rock. He says, this note came out today from the middle of the mountain, from the deepest part of the mine. Estamos bien. We're all fine, all 33 of us. The hope almost impossible to grasp, the details beyond our imaginations. The 33 had survived on a spoonful of tuna and half a glass of milk every 2 days. Now the drilling began not to extract from the rock, but to insert supplies and water and messages down to the miners.
And that drama began just 17 days into this entire crisis. But the one piece of information, when would these miners come out, that was unknown. Until this somber warning came from Lawrence Goldborn, Chile's Minister of Mines. He told our partners, the BBC.
They understand that we have to go through 700 meters of solid rock to rescue them, so they can have a sense of that it will be a long period of time.
And that's where it stood at the end of August, months, perhaps into the next year. With luck before Christmas, they were saying. The miners were advised of their fates. They discussed music, mental health, keeping their spirits up in the darkness. And meanwhile, an unprecedented international effort to speed the rescue began.
Brandon Fisher, one of several American drillers from Center Rock Incorporated, that's in Pennsylvania, they make the drilling system that was being used in the rescue. It's designed for drilling deep wells, and he said it's being tested like never before.
Drilling for human life is a completely different task at hand. I mean, it's so much more important than anything else that we've been drilling for over our careers.
And that preciousness was evident everywhere. While the drilling continued, families and the miners held on to their lifelines, connecting the surface to the dark cavern 2,000 feet below.
Nietos, monitos míos, dice, estoy muy feliz.
I was very happy to get your letter. You can't imagine how much I miss you. I never doubted that we'd get out of here because God and Jesus have always been with us. I'm fine, a little weak because I'm missing steak with avocado and watching TV.
That's Marcela Reguedas, the daughter of 56-year-old heavy equipment operator Omar Reguedas, reading one of the many letters her dad had sent up the supply tube. He's still down there, Omar is. The miners again and again expressed in their letters how they were worried for their families on the surface. They were all right down below ground. Marcela has been keeping a diary all this time and, like many family members, recording their emotions with the whole world watching and listening.
I spoke to my dad last weekend. He seemed happy and was in a better mood than at other times. I think he knows the rescue is near and that he will be with us soon. We can all talk to him every weekend, so we do whatever we can to be here when that happens. We only have 8 minutes for the four of us, and it's very difficult to say so many things in such a short time. So we tell him that we love him and we miss him, and try to cheer him up. Generally, we try not to talk too much about the rescue, just like the psychologist recommended. We tell him only what's necessary, so we only told him that it would happen soon. We are very happy the rescue might happen in just a few days, but we are a bit worried about my dad's health. We do know that as soon as he gets out, he will go straight to the hospital in Copiapo so that they can run some medical tests. What we do after he gets rescued will also depend on his mood and what the psychologists say, so we don't have any plans to hold a party yet. This sad experience has helped my family to be even more united. We now appreciate the small things in life, like the neighbor or friend who offers help or some words of encouragement. We have also remembered that God is here with us.
Marcella writes that now her family appreciates the small things in life. But today, what would the diary entries read, John? There will be a time for writing and rewriting these tales. When it became clear last week that the drilling would reach the miners much sooner than we had expected, all that hesitant joy started gathering momentum until right now.
And we're experiencing that joy, along with the Michael Gillerman, who's an 18-year-old mining veteran and author of Face Boss, the memoir of a Western Kentucky coal miner. He joins us from his home in West Kentucky. That's the sound of the seventh miner coming to the surface. Michael, we're all miners this morning, right?
That's correct. It's just remarkable what's taking place there.
And when you feel this solidarity, how do you feel as they're coming to the surface one after the other?
Well, I never experienced anything like this personally, but it's just remarkable. Over 2,000 feet deep, and to bring these guys out after 69 days, what can you say?
Yeah, Michael, thanks so much for joining us. And you're as a coal miner in soft stone of coal. They're in hard rock of a gold and a copper mine. What's the difference in the experience, do you think?
Well, never having been in a gold or a copper mine, the first thing that I noticed was the depth of the seam. They were 2,000 feet deep, whereas here in Western Kentucky, our number 9 coal seam was around 350 feet below the surface. So that's the first thing that comes to mind. And also the temperature. I think it was around 85 degrees where these men were pocketed, whereas here it's most usually around 69 to 70 degrees year-round.
But as miners say, once you go underground and you can no longer see the sun, it's all the same mine, right?
Well, more or less it is. Of course, there are differences in each mine. Some are wet, some are dry. There's differences in all of them. But there is this definite brotherhood between anyone that's underground mining coal, gold, or whatever. It's there.
And Michael Gillerman, when you go down in the mines and you have for 18 years, do you think of what you would do if you were in this situation? Is this kind of a worst-case scenario? You're trapped underground. You're looking for the probes. You're trying to get messages in and out, surviving on tuna and milk.
No, really. You don't dwell on it. In fact, I never dwelled on it. As a section foreman or a face boss, I was always concerned, you know, about the welfare of my men. That was foremost, their safety. But no, I didn't dwell on it, but I was trained to know what to do if there was an emergency or a disaster. And down there are so many unforeseen things that can happen, so you had to be on your toes all the time and react, and your reaction was based on your experiences.
In your report, I mean, in listening to the reporting here, these miners seem to have their spirits, you know, very much at a high level, and psychologically they seemed very prepared for something like this.
Correct.
Which suggests that you got to be a special person to be a miner, and this sort of spirit is part of that. Explain us to that for us.
I attribute this to camaraderie of working together with the same men day after day, year after year. And you do develop these relationships. You do know each other very well, and a lot of times you know their families. So there is this special bond, and that's one of the reasons. You reinforce each other to keep you strong.
And we've seen those families all there gathered around the mine, and, you know, these are situations you can hear now, as you can hear the ambience there at Camp Hope. Dawn is breaking down in Chile, and there's light now there as they go after that ninth miner. Eight are already out at this point. These families are very, very happy and joyful, Michael Gillerman. But I can recall so many scenes in West Virginia in coal mine disasters where there's not that feeling of joy and there's not that sense of hope.
That's correct. That's correct. The big difference was that this was a mine or a roof collapse. And unfortunately, like in West Virginia, at Sago in the Upper Branch mine, they were explosions. And there's a vast difference when you have an explosion versus a roof fall. Anytime there's a fall, there's always that chance that, you know, you can be rescued. But unfortunately, during an explosion, there's so much damage. Then you have to deal with the bad air and then the barricading yourself in and things like that. So there is a vast difference.
Michael Gillerman, you mentioned a moment ago that when you go down in the mine, you never focused on the potential for a collapse, and yet we heard from miners down in Chile, from other miners who were not trapped, but that they always had the sense, that every miner has the sense when they go underground, that they're on a tightrope, which is a strange analogy to use, but that something could go wrong. They have to have trust in that mine.
Well, that's true, but no, it wasn't like being on a tightrope. You become comfortable with your environment, the more experience that you have. And the miners aren't fearful. They weren't afraid. They were down there doing their jobs, and I don't think they all dwelt over the hundreds of feet of rock over their heads. They were there to do the job, and they're not fearful people. I really didn't hear this particular individual what he had to say, but at least that's my experience.
Well, but Michael, it's also their relationship to rock is different from, you know, Todd or my relationship to rock. I mean, these are people that are used to pushing it around, you know, slicing through it with these big heavy machines. Is it easy to have confidence in the drillers who are undergoing the rescue operation? You guys feel as though, you know, the earth is a little bit something you have to respect, but you can command it to a certain extent.
Well, that's correct, and you do have to place a lot of confidence in the people on the surface to rescue you, but, you know, I've never had to go through what these miners went through, and I think the last time that happened in the United States was in Pennsylvania at that Q Creek mine, you know, the flood where they punched through and the water came in on them, and they were down there trapped for 3 days, but they were only 250 feet below the surface versus the 2,000 feet for the Chilean miners. So, yes, you definitely, I have a lot of faith in the engineers. They can just pinpoint a spot and drill right to it. So I always had that in the back of my mind, that if something catastrophic did happen, that they could and would get to us.
Anything you'd say to those miners down in Chile this morning if one was having coffee with you?
I'd just give him a pat on the back, and I would just have to sit there in amazement.
Michael Gillerman, 18-year mining veteran and author of Face Boss, the memoir of a Western Kentucky coal miner. He's on the line with us, sort of giving us a sense of this brotherhood of solidarity among miners as we all watch the rescue taking place down at the San Jose mine in Chile. Joining us now is BBC correspondent Gideon Long from Camp Hope as well. Gideon, good morning.
Good morning to you.
There was a briefing a moment ago where it seemed as though the authorities were trying to explain what was going on and their assessment of the success of the operation so far. What can you tell us?
That's right. There was a briefing with the health minister, Jaime Mañalich. He was talking principally about the health aspects of the operation. He said that he confirmed that 8 of the miners have now been brought out of the ground. 2 of them are in hospital in the city of Copiapó, and another 3 of them should be on their way to hospital soon. He also said that all of the miners physically and are in good condition and mentally as well. He said so far no serious health problems.
And there was concern that in the capsule there might be some oxygen problems during the 30 minutes that it takes to get from 2,000 feet down to the surface. Any trouble with that so far?
No trouble with that so far, although it will be interesting to see what happens over the next few hours, because now we're into the group of the weakest miners. Some of the miners who will be brought up in the next phase will be those with the most serious health problems. The next man out of the ground is Mario Gomez. He's 63 years old, the oldest of all of the miners, and he suffers from silicosis. So there will be some concern now for the next group of miners as they come out.
Incredible. Gideon Long, BBC correspondent, reporting from Camp Hope outside the San Jose mine, where 8 miners are out. They're going after that oldest miner, the 9th miner underground. Gideon Long, thanks so much. Todd, do we have some headlines before we go?
We have 33. Like you mentioned, John, we have 8 miners out and 9 making their way up. And that seems to be the biggest news of the morning. We're waiting on that 9th miner and the oldest and sickest one to come out so far, and waiting to see his condition when he comes up.
The political story also yesterday, we want to keep you up to date on that. In California, the gubernatorial candidates Jerry Brown and Meg Whitman squared off once again in a very feisty debate. That campaign is heated for a governor there in California. All the headlines and following the live coverage of the Chilean mine rescue on The Takeaway. Stay with us.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.